Disclaimer, I am a counseling student, I am not a mental health professional, and I cannot give or offer mental health services.
You're listening to Good You. I'm your host, Samantha, and today I have a special guest, Dr. Julius Austin. He is actually one of my professors in my master's program, and so I'm so excited to have him on and so grateful that he said that he'd be on today to talk with us about what therapy looks like. And this is something that, you know, he wanted to talk about, and I'm really glad because we talked about the red flags in therapy. We talked about how to find a therapist, but then, I mean, now you're here, now you're in therapy, and what is it actually supposed to be? What is a healthy therapeutic relationship look like? And there's no one better than to sit down with Dr. Austin and talk about this. Truly, he is such an awesome professor, and I'm not just saying this to get some extra bonus points, but I mean, like, Dr. Austin, if you want to give me some extra bonus points, I won't, you know, say no to that. But yeah, like, he genuinely is a teacher that I relate to in our senses of humor. And I also envy in a way that of his like state of mind and like his vibe. And I think y'all will kind of pick up on that during the episode. Very relaxed, very, very chill, very like go with the flow. Like, and I really love that about his character. So I really hope y'all enjoy today's episode. Let's get started. All right. Hello, Dr. Austin. Thank you so much for being with me today.
It's a pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, this is so exciting. So you are the first professional I'm having on the podcast.
A first real professional with real credentials. And so I hope I don't embarrass that profession.
No, I think I got the first best one I can get. Okay, so can you tell us a little about yourself and the credentials that you hold?
Sure. Credentials wise, I'm an LPC, NCC, so nationally certified counselor, licensed professional counselor. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision. I have a master's in clinical mental health counseling. And I mean, all the way back to undergrad was a double major in psychology and exercise and sports science.
I mean, you're just making me look like lazy or something.
I'm out of breath just saying all that stuff. But I mean, you know, that's just what you acquire when you stay in the profession for a while, you know, so.
That's true. I think it's, you know, then you have all this time. So you're like, I mean, I might as well keep going.
Exactly. Yep. And that's what I did. Yeah, I just kept going and eventually found myself here.
So Dr. Austin is my group counseling instructor. And mm-hmm. The first day that we came in and he told us all of his background, I was like, I've got to amp it up. And then I started a podcast basically in spite of that.
See, there you go. Yeah. See, I knew I was rubbing off. You know, what's funny, though, is that like just saying that stuff, I feel sometimes kind of distant from the experiences that I've had. So when I say it, it's like, that's just the life I've led, you know, but for some other people, you know, it's like, wow, that, you know, you've done a lot of stuff in like, you know, however, you know, old you are. And it's like, well, yeah, but I wasn't thinking during the time like, oh yeah, let me add this to the, when I'm 35 and I'm sitting in front of a class, I'm going to be able to say this, you know?
Yeah. You're like, did I do all that?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did I have the energy and time to do all of that?
I feel like I never have the energy. You just gotta keep pushing.
That's where I'm at.
Well, what made you choose this line of work?
Oh, I think I was always kind of bred by my parents to choose this line of work. So my parents aren't like clinical therapists at all. They're not, you know, they don't have any professional degrees, but My dad is a construction worker, and what he's been doing over the years that I've been kind of seeing is he'll take on crew members that are ex-prisoners or, maybe substance misuse, people from the community that find it hard to maintain a consistent job. He'll take them on, right? And, I've seen him over the years train some of these men in like a trade and then go on and create their own crew and their own business and feed their families, and in that, I know it sounds like pretty quick, but in that process, I was able to see my dad communicate with these men, care for them in a very like compassionate way, be very confrontational with them when they didn't do what he expected. And just seeing my dad do that through osmosis, I think a part of me has always been groomed to go into the helping profession. Same thing with my mom. My mom always did that as well. Like, giving back to the community, being on like our like little board for the elementary school that we were on, and then going into the state, and doing stuff like that. Just there's always been like a helping aspect to like a community focused aspect to my family. So I've been kind of born into this. I think therapy was just something that suited me, out of all of the professions that I could have chose.
Wow, that's awesome. You grew up in that environment of helping and just.
Yes.
That's yep. That's really awesome.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a forceful, like you need to be a helper. You need to do this, right? Like my parents just wanted me to be happy and healthy. And I just think just being a part of that family, being a part of, being a son to my mom and my dad and seeing them interact with other people, like, it's very like I find myself in this profession thinking this is where I was supposed to be.
Yeah, it's like it didn't have to be enforced because it was observed. You saw it.
Oh, perfect. Yes. Yep. Yep. Exactly. It's exactly how it was.
Awesome. I had to learn it all from the beginning, truly.
Well, I'm privileged. I'm privileged to have really, really great parents who, were very patient with me and my brother and my sister.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why you so successful and you've gone all these different places. And
man, I'm just trying to replicate that process with my kids, so
yeah. That's why I'm holding off.
that's good.
Well, what do you love most about what you do?
So what's happening right now, right? So like engaging in a relationship. There's something that's happening, right, between the stuff that I have going on, right, just in my own personal life, in, my kid's life, my wife's life, like my brother, my sister, that's all the stuff that's happening, right? And then there's like you and all the stuff that you're dealing with and experiencing and all this stuff, right? But there's something that's happening in between the two of us that's like very important, right? And like to try to, the tension that exists, the tension of like, is this relationship going to work? Is it going to be fun? Is it going to be healthy? What role do I play in making it healthy and making it fun? And also like, how do I express myself in the most genuine way to where you feel like you experience me and not some like caricature of this professional? That's one of the best things about, this profession, but also like my experience in the profession. It's like what's happening now.
Yeah. I've noticed since you've become my professor that like you thrive mm-hmm. in the mysteriousness.
Oh yeah. I try to create it sometimes. Yes. In session.
I'm in class and he's like, I don't know, do whatever for your paper. And I'm like,
no, I need boundaries. I need structure.
It's a trap.
Oh yeah, do you need boundaries and structure? Tell me more about that.
I'm figuring it out slowly but surely.
That's a trap. Yep, that's a trap. Yeah.
Well, so today I brought you on because we're going to be talking about what therapy looks like. And I think that, confuses people and it scares people. Mm-hmm. and it's that unsureness that you love.
Yep.
But yes, other people can't stand that. Yep. We'll be discussing.
Yes, let's do it. I'm excited.
Okay, awesome. Me too. So what does the introduction process in therapy look like?
So there is a like a textbook way, right, of introducing, like introducing someone to the process. And then there's like a more realistic way that I've experienced over the years of like having a prior practice, right? So in a textbook way, you know, the person would call in, you would be present to pick up the phone, right? Nothing going on in your life. You'd pick up the phone. You would be calm and like, hey, you know, my name is Julius. You know, nice to meet you. Like, tell me what, you know, what you'd like to utilize these services for. And they'd come out with like a clear, like, this is what I need. And you would have like a, all right, well, here's my website. You can go here. You can sign up for sessions. These are the preliminary paperwork that you fill out. Go ahead and look at my schedule a time, and then we'll get connected for our very first session, right? And then you'd explain to them what the first session looks like and all of that jazz, right? And then you'd meet like on a Tuesday at 2, right? That's like kind of the clear cut textbook way, right? But I think in reality, it's like, you know, you're chasing after your kids and you're out of breath and your work phone rings and you're like, okay, let me grab this. So you pick up and you're out of breath. The client's like, hello. And you're like, hello. And like, you know, your AirPods won't connect to your phone. So you can't hear the person for like 2 seconds until it clicks over. You finally hear the person. The person's like, hey, is this who I'm supposed to be talking to? You know, and you're like, yeah, what's up? You know? And then instead of saying like a brief introduction, they go into like, finally, I have someone to talk to. So they like go on this spiel, you know, and you're like, listen, I just want to give you the information so that we can set up a place so we can do this like legally. Mm-hmm. You know, you do that, you get around to it, you find a like a date and time, which sometimes takes a bit of work and finagling your schedule, you know. So you finally get them on the schedule, and then they show up for the first session, maybe 2 or 3 minutes late. Or maybe you have to push them because you got a client running over. You get into the first session and it's like, okay, we're here and we have this hour, you know, to like create for ourselves. So that's like a more realistic version of like what it's been like, especially in the time of like pandemic where the resources are very slim and people are more at home, which means they're more accessible, you know, and they have the freedom to be able to do therapy like via Zoom at, you know, you're zoomed into someone's living room. You know, it's a bit more fast paced than it was when it was like a face to face practice.
Yeah, I definitely find that it's also more comfortable for people because, they don't have to leave their home.
Yep. Yeah. Comfortable little bubble. So in the introductory process, I find that it's a lot, maybe not easier, but I think it's a little bit more centering when I'm trying to introduce someone to the process of therapy. So, you know, what are the fees? What time can we meet? What do you actually want to get out of this experience? You know, like, what do you want out of this relationship? What do you feel like you need that you're missing? Right. Kind of like grounding myself in the person's existence, you know, so like what's happening, like how are you existing in the world right now, and can you let me in on like what you're aware of. It's a lot easier to do that when you're in your living room and no one's around, and you know, you can just like express yourself without having to put on clothes or put on makeup or, you know, whatever.
How like deep does it get first session normally?
So it really depends, right? What I like to do in the first session is I like to get the paperwork out of the way, right? And I know that like out of the way seems like a very dismissive, right? But out of the way in the sense of like, I don't want the first session to be taken up by reading documents, you know? So what I like to do is I have this website where clients can go, they can fill out their preliminary paperwork. So like, all of the releases of information, biopsychosocial, the consent to treatment, the consent to doing treatment over video, all of those consent forms, and they, you know, they read over them or maybe like glance over them, you know, and then like I usually start the first session with, you know, like, I know you went over this paperwork. We obviously, that's after we go over like limits to confidentiality and stuff like that. Do you have any questions about the paperwork? And it's always like, no, right? Sometimes it's, you know, can we talk about the price? Especially during the pandemic when people had no jobs, like, can we talk about the price, you know? Yeah, so then like once we're like settled in and the paperwork talk is kind of done, like that's when it, that's when I'm like, how about we talk about our relationship? Because there's multiple things happening within the introduction, right? There's the centering myself in your life, figuring out like, so do you, are you married? Do you have kids? What's happening for you? And also like centering ourselves within our relationship, you know, like, so how are you feeling just sitting across from me? Are you like, what are you picking up just within our relationship? How, like, what do you, what are some intentions that you want to bring into this relationship? Those are all very important first session things that I think goes missed sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that can get boundaries set at that time as well, because I read a post the other day, actually it might've been today, on that subreddit I was telling you about earlier. Where someone was saying that they had really hard time opening up to people and their therapist keeps those strict boundaries and they're starting to feel really upset about it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the healthy, what a healthy therapeutic relationship looks like and why therapists need to keep those boundaries?
Sure. So, so a healthy therapeutic relationship looks like something that is very open to the ideal of communicating when things feel good and when things feel not so good, right? So I want my clients to feel safe enough and comfortable enough to say, I think you're pushing too much, right? And for me to say, okay, so like, what is it like to be pushed by me? You know, like, it feels like you're dominating me or you're scaring me or, you know, you're powerful or, you know, whatever, you know? And then, it, so it's all fodder for the relationship, right? So like, to be, you know, being overpowered in this relationship must feel very isolating, especially when the thing that you want to do is be closer to me, you know, like it's all relationship based, you know? So that's what a healthy relationship looks like. Right. But I think there's boundaries for clinicians. So a boundary for a clinician, right, I think on a personal level is to understand some areas of your own personal work that you probably haven't done yet, right? So maybe some areas where there may be some like counter transference. So that's one, right? And then kind of creating not necessarily a boundary around it within the relationship, but being kind of open. So this is something that I would say, right? It's like, man, you know, you kind of like mentioning that about your wife, right? I'm just kind of making that up. I'm having like a hard time trying to conceptualize how I'm feeling around just, you know, that whole situation, right? So I just want to be mindful of not projecting my own stuff onto you, you know? And I don't know where that line is, but I just want you to know that I want to be mindful about that, you know?
And do you think the clients should be just as open about their transference?
Yes. Yeah, in the perfect world, clients would be, right? But what happens, what I've experienced is like three sessions from the time where they could have been open, they're finally open. And I'm like, you've been feeling this way for 3 weeks? Oh my God. You know, now, okay, let's like unpack this, you know? But, you know, I find that like if it's important, it'll usually come back up again. It'll come up multiple times. So when a client says that, I automatically go through like the Rolodex of experiences with that client and say, okay, I remember 2 weeks ago you said this. That's why that's making sense, you know?
Yeah, or it can come out as like maybe lashing out or like.
Yes, very much so. But also I think clinicians need to be aware of that as well, aware of how like So if somebody's like, you know, somebody mentions something that's like a hot topic for a clinician, so like politics or religion or something like that, or maybe like racism or something having to do with like gender equality or whatever is hot for the clinician, right? Sometimes we can lash out in our own ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like unhelpful to the therapeutic process.
Right. That's one of the the episode that I had to spot red flags in therapy is yep. that is that clinicians aren't allowed to impose their own values.
Sure.
And yep. that's how that'll come out if they aren't working on themselves
yep.
And those feelings, then it's going to yep. come out in the session.
Yeah. So it'll be something like, well, don't you want to have the kid though?
Mm.
Like, well, don't you want to get married before you know, it'll mm-hmm. like a question. I'm not saying you should. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, okay, well, all right.
But then you're the professional, so maybe I should be listening to the professional. And then
exactly, yeah. And that's where the spiral sometimes can get like out of control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. And then I've seen clinicians, especially just in my job as an educator, fall down into that spiral, right? Mm-hmm. And then like then you're starting to suggest things for clients, you know, suggest a way of living, and that's where unhealthy boundaries come in. You know, mm-hmm. it's hard.
Yeah, I can see how I start practicing in fall. So
right.
I'll keep you updated. I haven't gotten there yet. Just my techniques partner.
Yeah, no, man. Practicum. Whew. Yeah, it's I think it's all fun and games, not to minimalize, right, your education or higher education, because I went through it too. But it's kind of fun and games until you get into practicum and you're like sitting across from another human that's mm-hmm. looking at you saying like, hey, I'm not coming because I'm having the best time of my life here. You know, mm-hmm. like out there in the world, it's hard.
Yeah,
it is hard. And like, I need help.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't have need mandated. Advice. Yes. Or you have mandated. That's like, I need help, but I don't feel like being here.
Yeah. I don't want to be here.
Like, yeah, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here with you.
Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, I remember when I was a student, it's like, I don't want to be here, but not only do I not want to be here, I don't want to be here with this know nothing, uneducated, unexperienced student. You know, like the word student was like a cuss word.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm waiting for it. It's okay. I'm pre-prepared. I know what I am.
I know what I am. You don't have to tell me.
No.
Yeah. I know I'm a student, you know, but that doesn't mean that I don't know anything.
Yeah. Like, thank you.
Yeah, right. Well, that means I'm untainted by the world. You could have had one of these old grizzled jaded therapists, yeah. but I'm fresh and clean.
Brand new.
You know, I'm brand new.
Don't you like the new quality?
The newness of me. Yep.
So I also have on there, on the questions that I sent to you.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
So I have a friend, actually I have multiple friends, and it drives me absolutely crazy. But I'm sure that there are multiple people out there that experience this. What can you say to people who feel as though they don't have enough of a reason to go to therapy?
Sure. I think life experience is enough of a reason to go to therapy. Like if you're experiencing life in any way, you can benefit from therapy, mm-hmm. right? Even if it's just a simple, like, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. This is what I'm thinking. This is how I'm feeling, right? And just getting that out to another human, you know, not in a sense of like, does that make sense? Do I need to change? But just the act of vocalizing your thoughts and the way that those thoughts pair with the feelings and the way that those thoughts and feelings pair with like behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's beneficial to like just kind of be transparent, open yourself up and experience, you know, hearing yourself and how you feel. Man. Yeah.
Every time they're like, I just don't think therapy could help me. And I'm like, what do you think I'm wasting my time?
You don't think that like a consistent relationship with someone who like genuinely cares about you and just, you know, wants to see anything positive happen, and also can like consistently listen without projecting their own stuff onto you would be beneficial.
Yeah. No, I can't see it. I don't even know why I'm in this master's program, you know, just for the fun of it.
It's funny. Yeah. Some people are like that though, you know?
And that's, I think, that fear base.
Sure. Well, because it's, you know, it's like, this is what some, you know, new clients have come to me with the idea of like, I know I should be in therapy, but I don't really know why I should be here, mm-hmm. you know? And one of the reasons why, I think the biggest why, is to be reflective of the self and also have the self reflected back to you, you know? So like when I'm in a relationship with someone, I'm pretty transparent about, hey, this is how I'm experiencing you. Like I'm experiencing you as trying to hide how you really feel in an attempt to like get what you really like want. But like, why can't you just say what you want? Yeah. You know, like what's so hard about saying what you want? You know, and I think that like it's very hard to have the self reflected back towards you, you know, people, I can understand why that's fearful.
Yeah.
You know,
but mental health is just as important as physical health, people.
It is.
And it goes hand in hand too.
It does. In the best case scenario, I would have someone with a team around them of you know, a trainer, a therapist, obviously a medical doctor, and just like, you know, just care for yourself. It's just a way of caring for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. You kind of just touched on it. I don't know why I'm here, but what if a client doesn't know what to talk about every time they come into a session? And should clients come in with a plan, or should it kind of just flow?
So yes, I would say yes to all of that, right? So I think clients, right, if there's any clients listening, right, conceptualize the therapeutic relationship as a vehicle, right? That like you sit in, sometimes you're in the driver's seat, sometimes you're in the passenger seat. But it's like, it's a vehicle going towards awareness, going towards understanding, going towards sometimes acceptance. But there's no like, sometimes, right? For some clients who are unclear about what they want, there's like this unclear destination. So take the idea of a destination out of the equation, mm-hmm. and just maybe not even enjoy, but just sit and be present with the experience of sitting with somebody else in a relationship, right? Like, what are ways that you build relationships that are healthy and unhealthy, right? What are some of the insecurities that you have with communicating with somebody else? We're like really trying hard to be consistent in a relationship. What are some of the things that come out for you, right? Yeah. There's no destination. It's just the relationship.
Yeah. That makes sense to me how you said that, because I started journaling recently.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, I don't know what to journal about. And because I used to journal when I was angry, and that's all I would, you know, that's how I'd get all my anger out. And I was like, this is probably toxic.
Yeah, just like playbook of all the angry. Like,
I got a new notebook because we didn't want all that negativity. But I just kind of, if I can't think of something, I just write about what happened yesterday and what I plan on doing today. And then it kind of just leads to more.
You know what? Like this is what I would recommend. And this is what I've been doing. So I started this journal, since you're going to be a clinician, right? We have this very unique place of witnessing the human experience, right? By the hour, you know? So what I tend to do is not for every single client I see, right? But towards the end of the day, maybe the end of the week, there's a certain amount of phrases that stick out to me, you know, like, today's Tuesday, but there's already clients that I saw yesterday where phrases are like sticking out to me. Write those down, write down what they meant, why they were meaningful, what you're taking away from it, right? And then just leave it. It's not a clinical note, but just write in your journal, like, specific phrase from a client that, like, I don't know, you're just holding on to for some reason. There's hundreds of phrases from clients over the years, and memories of what they experienced that, like, I just journaled about. And after a while, right, when you're like 72 and you're still doing therapy and you've forgotten more than you know now, you know, you can look back and, like, back in 2022, there was this one client at 3 o'clock on Tuesday that said something about, you know, this meaningful phrase of life that he's learned over, like, being a military vet or something. And you're like, man, I'm glad I held on to that.
Wow.
That memory.
That's so special. I'm going to have to write it down. So I remember to do that because my memory already is awful.
Well, there was one client maybe about 5 years ago where we made this pact in session where there was this bee buzzing around the room because I had my window slightly open. I was on like the second or third floor of the building. And the bee just kind of came in. And right before the bee stung the client, a gust of wind came in, right? And the bee just like landed on him and then like flew away. And the client was like, I looked up at him and he was like sweating. He was just super nervous. And he was like, I never want to forget this moment. He was like, so just like promise me that like we may never see each other again, right? But promise me you will not forget this moment.
That I just got stung by a bee in your office.
Just got stung by a bee in your office. I'm sweating. But I'm okay. Like, yeah. I survived. You know, like, I'm still, like, here. Yeah. You know? I was like,
I experienced it.
Do you want to go put some water on your hand or what?
Are you good?
Yeah, like, okay, yeah, I promise. I won't forget. Do you want to get that taken care of, or are you just going to sit here?
The toothpaste on the sting, isn't that a thing? I don't know.
I thought it was like a cigarette ash or something on the.
I think people are just messing with everyone now that I think about it.
There's probably some professional bee stinger person listening to this pod, like,
and they're like, no, oh my god, don't do that.
It's witch hazel with a little squeeze of lime and a prayer. That's how you get rid of
it. All you have to do. Gosh, now I'm going to message her so she says it on her podcast.
Right.
why do clients... This is an interesting question for me. And why is because I've never found it difficult to come to therapy. If anything, I'm like running into the office.
You're right.
But there are some people that really get anxious going every session. And I wonder why that is.
So this is just my experience, right? Mm-hmm. It is normal to be anxious going into therapy at any point. First session, last session, middle of the, you know, your experience with the clinician. It's not only normal, but it's important. Mm-hmm. Like, it's important to feel that anxiety because, like, you're learning and you're growing in real time within the room. You know, so like the person that you walk in as is not the person that you're going to come out as in so many ways, you know. So like the nervousness should be present. I think it's ultimately what you do with that nervousness, right? Like, can you use the therapeutic relationship to add some type of support to the nervousness that you're feeling? You know, like what type of support do you need when you're feeling nervous about maybe a change that's coming or an awareness that you're afraid of, like, you know, experiencing? Can you use another person, another human to support that type of anxiety? Right. I think that's important.
And they can bring that up too. Like, I'm feeling nervous every time I come in.
Yep. I mean, if a client did that to me, I would love it. Right. You're feeling nervous every time you come in. Like, I'm wondering, what is it about this room or me? Mm-hmm. Or this relationship, right, that like creates that nervous energy for you.
Right. And I think that's like something to anyone who's listening to know that, you know, you can ask questions. That's what the counselor is there for. And it could fix that issue. Like, what if something in your room was making them nervous? We could They could easily just move it out the room and make that process so much easier.
Yeah. There, I can't tell you how many times where I'm pretty particular about just my, just the therapy room and what that looks like and, you know, what people are walking into. I want people to, when they walk into my office, to feel like, oh, I know this person. Like, this is a collection of things that are like, maybe not sacred, but are extremely important to this person, right? Every aspect of the room, of my therapy room, is like, there's chosen pieces, right? That like mean things to me. And I always, in the first session, right? In the first session, I'm always like, do you have, like, is there anything that you feel like you need to know about me personally, professionally, whatever, to feel closer to me? Is there anything in the office that you have a question about, right? I want to really give some space to where you can feel like you're closer to me and you know and feel like you have an idea of like who I am and where I come from. And sometimes clients are like, no questions. All right, see you next week, you know? And sometimes people are like, yeah, what's that boat doing up there? You know, like, or what's that picture about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, just, it's like, I think it's that, well, it's not a real relationship, so I can't be too comfortable. And it's fear.
Right. I think the misconception is that it's not real. Like, it's a real relationship. Mm-hmm. So like, sometimes we're going to argue, right? Sometimes you're going to be frustrated with me. Sometimes we're going to be elated and we're going to laugh, right? We're going to, cry together, laugh together. Yeah. It's not always going to be fun. Sometimes, you know, we're going to be distant from each other. Sometimes we're going to be close. That's all a part of the therapeutic relationship.
I love it. And I'm learning so much in group from all of that since it's like, that's awesome. 10 of us.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've discussed a good bit of what clients can do in therapy. Yep, what are some of the most important things a client can do for themselves going to therapy?
So for themselves going to therapy, I would say, so one, to like ground yourself in your experiences, right? So think about it like you are, my brother uses this analogy with like bungee cords a lot. So think about, you know, you're in the center of like this room and there's bungee cords all strapped to you, right? It's little bungee cords that you use to like strap whatever in your truck, you know? Think about them extending to different things. So extending to your relationship with your mom, right? And like attach that to your mom and, you know, your relationship. Think about it extending to your relationship with your past self. You know, think about it extending to the self that you wish that you were, right? Or the self that you perceive people want you to be. Think about all those bunch, like, you know, your relationship with your kids or your wife or your partner or your job. Extend all those things, right? And really like ground yourself in the middle of all of these things that's tugging at your energy and consciousness, right? And just be like present with them and see where most of your energy like lies. Like, most of my frustration is with this particular thing. Maybe I should like focus my attention on this. Be very intentional and like in the first session to really let the clinician know, hey, there's a lot of things tugging at me, but this one in particular thing is something that I feel like it's very hard for me to figure out or work through on my own. Maybe come to session with like one or two or three of those things. Mm-hmm. And then just let's have an open, transparent conversation about, you know, what it would mean to explore some of those things in session. And what I mean by that is like, sure, a thing that's tugging at you is like your sadness or depression. So like, come to therapy and let's get rid of it. But like, man, your sadness and your depression is like vital parts of the way that you communicate and walk through life. So if we got like rid of them, who would be left? Like, what would be left, right? What part of your identity would remain? And will your family like that part of your identity? Because they've been used to you being sad and depressed for a really long time.
That's so true. Like anxiety, people start to get comfortable in that chaotic
feeling. Yes. Yes.
And then you're just like, now I'm anxious because I'm not anxious. How do you fix that?
Yep. Now the anxiety is gone and my family has no idea how to relate to me, you know? Yeah. Yeah. So like just, you know, grounding themselves in their experiences and plucking out maybe two or three things that like, man, this is something that I really love to explore. That'll go leaps and bounds to how quickly you can achieve what you want to achieve in therapy.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think I also wanted to add one thing in there for clients
is
to
just means.
Be honest, as honest as you can with their therapist. If something makes you uncomfortable that they're saying, doing, tell them. They don't want to do anything that's going to be harmful to you.
Yep. And if I can add, even to the point to where you're like, maybe this relationship isn't working. You know, like I would love for a client to come to me and say, you know, this has been great or this has been the worst part of my life. I don't think we're a good fit, you know, to work with each other. Could I have some recommendations for somebody out in the field that I don't know, is an expert in this area or that area, because that's what I really feel like I need. Yeah, I would love for that to happen because chances are I'm feeling it too.
Yeah.
Like I'm feeling the disconnect too.
Yeah. I was about to say, when he says he loves it, he's not being sarcastic. He loves confrontation.
Yeah, it's the way I live life.
And class and yeah.
And class, yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of people coming and saying that they don't feel like it's working for them, what are some reasons that therapy doesn't work for an individual?
So, man, this was such a hard concept to understand as a developing clinician. It's so hard not to take why therapy is not working personally.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember when I was beginning, it was like, I am doing something wrong, right? Like there's something that I'm doing that just doesn't fit for the clients and that's why they're leaving, you know? But sometimes clients just aren't ready to process the things that they say that they need to process. Like they feel like it's time and they feel like it's important for them to process it, but the amount of emotional energy that they would have to use is so daunting to where, you know, it's not a good time, right? So that's one thing. I think there's a very real like financial issue as well of like, you know, maybe like you know, from a financial perspective, therapy is just not like in the budget right now, right? So those are two things, but I think more importantly, it's usually a relational issue, right? I just cannot stress this enough. Do not, like, man, I rarely prescribe things to people, but do not feel like you have to stay in a therapeutic relationship that does not fit for you because of some like loyalty or like some like gratitude that you have for a clinician.
Yeah.
Like it is so much more healthier to say, man, this just, you know, it's just not a good fit. You know, like you remind me too much of my brother or my sister or whatever, you know, or an ex bar friend or an ex partner. You know, it's just too hard.
Yeah.
You
know? Or even if it was once a good fit and maybe now it's not anymore.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, that's why with clients, I do like these little check-ins after every session. Like, how's it going? You know, how's this relationship going for you? Do you feel closer to me, further away from me? Hey, what do you feel like you need, right, to get what you need out of this relationship? Yeah. You know, and having that open conversation allows for feedback. And you know, like, I think it's really good when we do this, but I also don't really find that helpful. You know, yeah, it's like, that's what I do with clients, especially early on.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. I don't think a lot of therapists do that. So like
It's hard.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. How are you? Like, how was this for you? It sucked. Okay. Well, I don't want to know that. Just like, don't show up next week.
Answer.
Yeah. Don't. Thanks. Don't. Just don't. You don't have to show up next week. You don't have to tell me this isn't going well. You know. I don't. Yeah. It's tough to get feedback from clients. You know.
Yeah. I have a friend in HR, and she's really helped me with receiving feedback because I used to be really bad at it. She's like, you have to. It's so good for you. And I'm like, you're in HR. That's like what it's all about. I'm about to be a therapist. I have very low self-esteem right now. Okay.
Yeah. It's because it's an art, right? Like, it's very individually based, right? It's an art.
Yeah, so you're like, putting yourself into it.
You're putting yourself into it, and it's a fingerprint. And like, when somebody tells you, hey, you know, change this because this isn't working, or I think that you may be better at building this relationship if you did this, it's like, don't tell me to change who I am to, you know. It can be very hard to conceptualize that there's some things that's going to fit for you and there's some things that's not going to fit for you, you know. And I think that's a parallel process with clients. There's some clinicians that'll fit for you, and then there's some clinicians that won't fit for you.
And this is also for everyone to know that just listening to this, you can tell that therapists are people too. We experience the same thing.
Yes.
That that clients are experiencing, and that we're frustrated, but I mean, we look so professional. And
well, actually, this is the first time I'm going to say this. I'm a robot. So
yeah,
actually. I'm actually not. Yeah. It's breaking news. Yeah.
I'm actually in school to become that robot. So when I graduate, I will be a full-on robot cyborg.
Oh, good. Yeah. Finally, crossing over to our side.
Yes.
And we're going to take over the world. That's how it feels, though, sometimes in session, especially in the beginning of, like, I have to be this robotic clinician that, like, always knows the perfect thing to say, mm-hmm. you know?
That's the pressure.
Yeah. Yep, that's the pressure. Yep.
So we talked some about it, but what are some of the benefits that people can get from therapy?
Oh man, it's
many.
Yeah, there's a lot, but I think one of the biggest benefits that I've seen my specific clients get from therapy is just this awareness of self, mm-hmm. right? So awareness of how you are, really awareness of like what kind of support you need from your environment. And also how to lend support for yourself, right? So how to become like self-sufficient, right? Without relying on your environment to give you the things that you feel like you need. Mm-hmm. While also being open to the environment to give you things, right? So like being receptive to the environment. So like being receptive to your friends for the gratitude that they feel for spending time with you. Right. Without overthinking, do you like me? Do you not like me? Mm-hmm. You know, feeling, just this awareness of like how somebody else experiences you. That's one of the hallmarks of like, at least the way that I do therapy is this is how I'm experiencing you. I don't know if you meant to come off this way, but I'm experiencing you as very, you know, passive when it comes to the death of whatever, you know, and it's kind of frustrating. Because I know how much this thing meant to you, and for you to be so passive is very confusing and frustrating, right? Like that, you're not going to get that from someone who, or you may not get that from someone who has like a vested interest in not, you know, causing any tension between the two of you. Mm-hmm. But in therapy, right, you get to firsthand experience and work through how somebody's experiencing you.
Yeah.
I think those are like benefits.
Yeah, that's why it's that mirror. Like you're supposed to be seeing yourself.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep. In the best case scenarios, I think we try to, as clinicians, help individuals to figure out, right, like who and how they are in the world. And the best way to do that, yeah, the best way to do that is via the therapeutic relationship.
Yeah. Yes. Hmm? Well, we have two questions left that I've added at the end. Right. And this is about what does the termination process look like? Mm-hmm. And so like when a therapist feels like someone's ready or maybe they can't do what they need to for this client and have to refer them out, etc. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So the termination process starts in session one, actually, right? So the very first session, I think, like, what would it be like? Like, what do you want to see when it's all said and done, right? Like, what would you hope to see change in your life or change within your own personhood? Mm-hmm. You know, like, how will we know when you don't need this relationship anymore? You know, and sometimes clients are like, oh, I don't know. But like, it's very important to be like purposeful about that type of conversation, you know? So it starts from the beginning. And I think as we're going through the process, I'm always checking in, you know, of like, all right, so how is this going? Like, do you feel closer to the goals that we set kind of like in the beginning of this relationship, you know? And then when we meet goals, I'm always like, hey, that we just met a goal. Like, this is how we met the goal. This is why we met the goal. We have about like one or two more goals left. How do you feel about moving forward into like maybe progressing to some of the other goals that we have, you know, on the sheet here, you know? So in sometimes the reality is that you don't get to meet all the goals, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes the reality is that like, oh man, this relationship was exactly what I needed. And I'm so grateful that, you know, we were both present in each other's lives, but I don't think I'm ready to meet the goal of, you know, whatever, right? I don't think I'm ready for that. So sometimes that's the way that the termination process can look. Mm-hmm. Another way is that the sessions become not pointless, right? But it becomes like a coffee talk, you know, like two friends just talking over coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, what I tend to do is I always think, I don't feel ethically right charging this person if they just want to like talk about stuff that they could be talking about with their friend. You know, I don't think they need a clinical therapist to like have a conversation like this. And that's when I bring that thing, you know, that exactly up. You know, it's not that I feel like nothing's coming out of therapy, but we're at a place where we're just kind of chatting, you know, and I just don't feel comfortable saying, give me this amount of money to kind of like talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also people can understand that sometimes you don't have to completely cut off. Some therapists do that, but for example, a lot of, I've talked before, therapists go to therapy. So my therapist and I have an understanding that, you know, I've met a lot of my goals, but when I need to, because of the stress from school or whatever, I can make that meeting with her.
Uh-huh.
And it does. And maybe it's once a month. Maybe it's, you know.
Sure. Yeah. It
doesn't have to be weekly forever, you know.
It does not. And sometimes that's what happens. We go from very intense 1 week, you know, one meeting a week or maybe even two meetings a week mm-hmm. to once every other week, to once a month, to once every other month to, like, are we still doing this? You know? Yeah. And sometimes, like, I'll do that with somebody for years, right? I've had clients for years where we see each other once a month or once every other month until something happens in their life. And they're like, hey, like, this just happened. Can we transition back into, like, our regular, you know, sessions? Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what termination looks like as well.
Yeah, exactly. So just know that it doesn't have to be a complete goodbye, but it's for you to be healthy. Like, you have to learn how to also rely on your own self during these anxious situations that life throws at you.
Yep, exactly. And be as communicative as possible with the clinician.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't need it as much anymore, or I need it more now.
Yeah. I need it more now. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what advice would you give to clients who have a therapeutic relationship terminated abruptly, maybe due to the therapist moving or the therapist thinking, I don't think I can help you with this anymore or whatever?
Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, that's just the nature of our profession, right? So like, especially like at a university counseling center or a community clinic or an agency, the turnaround rate is so high that you'll build a therapeutic relationship with a client, and all of a sudden, you know, the place has become unhealthy or whatever, and you decide to go in a different direction, right? And you, I mean, you, no matter how hard you try to access the client and communicate with them that this is what's happening, sometimes you don't get that opportunity to do so, you know? So my recommendation for clients who like, who's gone through that experience is to, one, like really feel whatever it is that you need to feel. So if it's frustration at the fact that they didn't say a goodbye or they left abruptly, if it's anxiety about maybe starting again or frustration with the whole process, like feel that and experience it. And then when you reach out to a new clinician, like if that's something that you want to do, express, hey, this is what happened in my last relationship. These were some of the things that I found extremely helpful. And these are some of the things that I found unhealthy, right, within the relationship. And I'm just wondering, I just want to check in with you and see, like, I don't know, what's your policy on like termination or, you know, whatever, right? Check in with that person and let them know some of your fears.
Yeah, exactly. And don't be afraid to reach out to another clinician just because it was terminated abruptly. That can be really hard.
Yep. Yeah. I've known clinicians where sometimes they had no choice. Yeah. Right. And they weren't given an option to, you know, say their final goodbyes to their clients. And, you know, and yeah, it's really, the therapeutic relationship is so sacred that really caring for the termination process is something that's almost as pivotal as the beginning of the relationship and, you know, and everything in between. Like good endings kind of need to happen, or at least endings that a client can actually explore with another clinician kind of needs to happen.
Right. Like that way, maybe the therapist can help refer, you know, and help them transition in that way. But like some type of closure from months, years, whatever of work.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I think this was a great talk today. We got into
Oh yeah, this was fun. I feel like it's these are like real honest questions that, you know, like real clients have.
Yeah.
You know,
because I'm a client. I'm a client and soon to be therapist, so the perfect person.
Well, that's good. It'll make you a little bit more empathetic to like what, you know, clients have to go through when like the anxiety of, so like, think about it, right? It's very hard to pick up the phone and say, I'm going to call and ask another human to help, you know, I just want to be heard.
Yeah.
You know, I just want someone to hear me, you know, and just the amount of like bravery it takes to pick up the phone and the amount of that compassion for self. Yeah, it's hard to be empathetic as a clinician when you pick up that phone and they're like, hey, is this so-and-so? Like, I'm just calling to do like individual therapy. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I cherish and value and respect clients just for the simple fact of wanting to see me.
Yeah. Then, and don't be disheartened if, you know, the therapist, the first, second, or third one isn't available, because since COVID also, it's been crazy.
Yes, it's wild.
Yeah.
It is wild. Sometimes I can't pick up the phone. Sometimes I'm in session while my phone is ringing and I'm like, I cannot pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The do not disturb is a helpful tool.
Right. I want to see what's going on.
Yeah. I like to feel the anxiety
of
my phone ringing and I can't answer it.
It's not that I'm not paying attention to you. It's just what you have to say is less important than the soccer game that's on right now. No, I'm kidding.
This is why we get along so well, because both of our sense of humor. Well, thank you much for being on today. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your day.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Anytime you want to talk about an issue, invite me back we don't even have to talk about an issue. We can just probably just talk,
That's true.
Know, for an hour or whatever. So,
we can both figure out.
It's an honor. It's a pleasure having you in the class. And I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh yeah. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Yes, I will be tomorrow's there, Wednesday. I swear.
You know me, if you're not there, okay.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm like sending an email, like, I'm so sorry. I got,
we all have lives.
Something happened. He gets back like 3 weeks later. He's like, it's fine.
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Oh man. This is fun. Oh.
All right. Thank you again, Dr. Austin, for being on the episode. That was really awesome. And I think everyone's going to enjoy it and learn something from it and take something home with this episode. So I'm really excited for that. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast. I'm on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And you can follow the podcast Instagram for updates on episode releases and what the next episode's going to be. My Instagram is goodyou.therapy. So I can't wait, and I'll see y'all next week. Today's music was written and produced by Tyler O'Brien. You can find him on Instagram at Dreamscape, DREAMSCAPE, and follow his band at Wastelander_band on Instagram.